Today, in the studio, Styx sings the songs that inspired them to rock in the first place on The Big Bang Theory. I am the Eggman. They are the Eggman. I am the walrus.
We hadn't planned on doing this record. We had planned on perhaps later on doing a studio album, and we had the songs. We're starting to write new music, and in the meantime, we had all these dates booked, and we were working, and so we had not slotted in a schedule to do an album. A completely unconventional, backwards way of making a record, and including the video, too. We did everything was sort of a reaction to the next, rather than being, here's the whole thing, now let's pick and choose how we want to go about it. So, but it was in doing that, we avoided all of those thought processes which might have deterred us from doing it.
It was an organic thing that took on a life of its own, and we just followed where it led.
Hey everybody, this is James Young.
And I'm Lawrence Gowan.
And this is Tommy Shaw.
We are Styx.
And we are in the studio for The Big Bang Theory.
If you are one of the many who in the last half of 2004 and the first half of 2005 heard a new version of I Am the Walrus by Styx on the radio and attempted to buy it or download it from an internet site, then you should take some satisfaction in knowing that your enthusiasm for what was intended to be purely a live performance piece actually influenced media programmers, a record label, and eventually the band Styx itself, as you shall see in this next hour. To explore this controversial Big Bang Theory, we convened a symposium in the studio with professors Tommy Shaw, James Young, and keyboard player and vocalist Lawrence Gowan of Styx. Lawrence, Joe Walsh advises all young musicians to learn to play every Beatles song. Is that still good advice in 2005?
I think it's great advice. I know that when I was in England in 1990, and there was a young engineer that was mixing the record. He had just worked on a Genesis record, and he said that when he started working on that album, Phil Collins came in with the 13 Beatles CDs and said, "Here, listen to all of these before you mix our album. This is everything you need to know about rock." So I guess there've probably been quite a few musicians that have come up with that advice, because it really is all there. You can tangentially kind of draw a line from just about every act there is to some aspect of the Beatles, and that's really what they've expanded upon. So yeah, I'd agree with Joe Walsh.
T-shirts, stupid bloody jeans. They mind you've been a naughty boy. You let your face grow long. A fish wife, pornographic priestess, boy, you've been a naughty girl, you let your knickers down. I am the Eggman. professional man. You should have seen him kicking Edgar Allan Poe.
From the new Styx album entitled Big Bang Theory, that's the outstanding tribute to the Beatles, first performed by Styx at Eric Clapton's Crossroads Festival in Dallas in summer 2004. I Am the Walrus by Styx features the lead vocal of Lawrence Gowan, who joined me in the studio with Tommy Shaw of Styx. Even the Beatles never attempted to play I Am the Walrus live, guys. Did you have any second thoughts when you listened to the original recording?
Well, that might be part of why we had the confidence to do it. I don't know. I don't think we ever thought of the fact that the Beatles never did a live version of it, but it's a song that, because Styx really, they really connected with people as a great live act initially. They're kind of a fearless band when it comes to what material they'll approach, because they've got the wherewithal to pull it off. And so, I mean, we never would have played it on stage if we didn't feel like, you know, we can definitely put this across with
of course
some authority.
Of course.
But at the same time, yeah, when you rethink it, you're absolutely right. You think, God, this is like. This is sacred ground treading on here.
So what we're saying is we didn't think too much.
No.
Before we did. We didn't think this stuff through. We didn't overthink it because, you know, you look at it, you just go down the list of these songs, Salty Dog, Can't Find My Way Home, you know, Manic Depression. If you thought about those too much and the ramifications of what you were taking on, you could easily talk yourself out of it and go, you know, I think I'll just leave that alone. But we didn't. And part of it was, there was kind of a rush to get it done. We hadn't planned on doing this record. We had planned on perhaps later on doing a studio album, and we had the songs. We're starting to write new music, and in the meantime, we had all these dates booked, and we were working, and so we had not slotted in a schedule to do an album. A completely unconventional, backwards way of making a record, and including the video too. We did everything was sort of a reaction to the next, rather than That's being. Right. Here's the whole thing. Now let's pick and choose how we want to go about it. So, but it was in doing that, we avoided all of those thought processes which might have deterred us from doing it.
It was an organic thing that took on a life of its own, and we just followed where it led.
Where and when did the spectacular live performance of I Am the Walrus occur? Where did you record this that we find on the album?
Oh, that we recorded that in Oregon, maybe about 2 or 3 days after the show that JY referred to in Chicago, and yeah, that's where we did it. You know, can I just paraphrase that great Texas expression you said? I think we rode the walrus in the direction it was going, and it led us to make a record where we did songs that were, in a lot of ways, atypical. You know, these are all songs I think that have stuck with people for years, but were never. You know, we're never really top 40 hits. There might be one or two on this record that were, but the rest of the songs on here really are songs that have hit people at a very profound level. And I think we've, much as I Am the Walrus did, because that was not a single for the Beatles, and so, and you know, and neither was, you know, I don't think One Way Out or, you know, I don't know if Can't Find My Way Home was ever a single.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. I know you deceived me, now here's a surprise. Magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Oh yeah. If you think that I don't know about the little tricks you play, I never see you in the put things in my way. Well, here's a poke at you. You're gonna choke on it too. You're gonna lose that smile. Because all the while I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles. Advantage of my trust in you when I was so far away. I saw you holding lots of other guys, and now you got the nerve to say that you still want me. Well, that just may be, but you gotta stand trial.
Can see for miles. Tommy, Pete Townsend told me that he did not think in 1968, he did not think he could ever write anything better than I Can See for Miles by, for The Who. and he was devastated when it wasn't a bigger hit. Can you believe that?
It's amazing to think that that song could be looked at like that, that it wasn't, and I mean, I guess that's the fact, it wasn't that major of a hit. But as far as I'm concerned, it was. I mean, the impact that it had on me, and I think everybody else in the band, that's part of our fabric. That's our musical upbringing, that song. And it just goes to show you, in a band like Styx, too, a lot of our biggest songs that we play in concert, they were never even attempted as pop singles, yet they're the fabric of the fans who still come to see us. The singles game, as you know, is a very strange place to be. You know, you live and die by it, and you know if you have a number one and then your follow-up goes to number five, you're a colossal failure, you know. And careers can be very short in the singles game, but a band like The Who, with songs that you don't look at their song list and wonder how far up the charts they went, because you believe in your hearts that those songs are meaningful and they belong in the you know, in your life's playlist. So I can see for miles, you know, and I really, in retrospect, all the songs on this record, it was really only in retrospect when we even had these discussions of how they did in the charts, because we knew them so well. Yeah. They meant something to us. And the title Big Bang Theory, you know, it's the origin of the universe, the Big Bang Theory, but for us, it's all these elements that created who we are. And that was what was important for us. And I can see for miles. For one thing, Todd Zuckerman got a chance to play the drums from his hero Keith Moon. We got to do vocally the parts that we've only been singing in our cars for years, and to get to sing those as Styx, that was a great treat.
Off your shoes, I know you're not going anywhere. Running round the town, singing your blues, I know you're not going anywhere. You've always been a good friend of mine, but you just keep on saying farewell. And the only time you're satisfied is with your feet in the wishing.
Oh,
Originally done by English blues rock band Free, that's Wishing Well, covered by Styx on their album Big Bang Theory. I'm Redbeard, and next, Tommy Shaw, James Young, and Lawrence Gowan refuse to see a doctor in the studio.
Hey, everybody, this is James Young.
And I'm Lawrence Gowan.
And this is Tommy Shaw.
We are Styx.
And we are in the studio for the Big Bang Theory.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm Redbeard. How important to the concept of the Big Bang Theory as a project is having three lead singers with totally distinct vocal styles and textures?
And willing to sing harmony with each other. That's one thing. It's one thing to be a singer, but to be a lead singer and to be willing to be part of a chorus at the same time. Because that requires you abandoning putting your own spin on the song and singing along with somebody else. That to me, that's one thing that distinguishes Styx, aside from the three lead vocals like that. But it was a huge help for us because we were able to not only just sing the songs that required one voice, but when it came time for the big chorus, it was a piece of cake for us.
Yeah.
Lawrence?
Well, yeah, the... Everyone's musical personality or their forte is allowed to come to the forefront with whatever songs they choose to sing. Like there's some obvious ones here, you know. Tommy should, you know, is the voice and the man to carry off One Way Out and also Can't Find My Way Home. You know, JY, obviously his voice is gonna resonate deep with Manic Depression and Locomotive Breath and the song he did with of Willie Dixon's If It Don't Make Sense, You Can't Make Peace. But for myself, it's the toughest thing for me coming into Styx, and the thing that I have to be most cognizant of is being part of that three voice, What do you call the three-headed monster again?
Medusa?
Yeah, no. That's the lady with the snakes coming out of her head. Hydra. The Hydra. That's
Hydra,
the dog with the three
good.
Heads.
There, very good. You're right.
The power of those three voices together are one of the most distinctive things about the sound of Styx, and being able to put myself into that that block harmony with JY and Tommy has been the that's the thing that I'm most aware of, and so. I think that's just one of our strengths.
Come down off your throne and leave your body alone. Somebody must change. You are the reason I've been waiting so long. Somebody holds the key. Well, I'm near.
with the timeless Steve Winwood, Eric Clapton composition Can't Find My Way Home from their one-off Blind Faith project. That's a magnificent rendition by Tommy Shaw on the Styx album Big Bang Theory. Bandmate Lawrence Gowan was suitably impressed, and JY weighs in too.
I think Tommy's voice is so, there's something very, very sincere in the way that he, and authentic, there's something extremely genuine in the way that he sang this song. And we had versions of it early on in making the record that he wasn't 100% happy with. And then I remember I went home to Toronto for a week or so, and then I heard the next version that he sent was something that he recorded at home, where he engineered it and, you know, did everything himself. And I think he found the really intimate and the perspective of where that lyric's coming from in such a great way that it's compelling to listen to him sing it.
JY, who's playing the fine acoustic guitar on Can't Find My Way Home?
On the record, Tommy Shaw played all the acoustic guitar parts. Mm. I mean, he's by far and away has a greater facility on that six-string instrument than I do. And the beautiful thing about this band is we've always, Tommy and I call him the alpha dog, and then he calls me the alpha dog, and then we've ultimately decided that we're the alpha dog tag team, and I also call us the blonde leading the blonde.
I like that too. With one song on Big Bang Theory, Lawrence Gowan of Styx was able to see one of his earliest rock influences come full circle.
I just remember as a kid, I remember the first time I heard Live at the Fillmore with Humble Pie. That was the first live rock record I'd ever heard. And just what was unleashed in Steve Marriott's vocal was something that I thought, that's like a quest that I'm going to continue on all my life. And there must be some way of getting to that. And sure enough, the only way to get to it was for Styx to finally record this song. And I'm glad you dig it.
Oh, it's incredible, Tommy. You're a great singer and an expressive singer, and you can do a lot of stuff. But was there any question about who was going to do the lead vocal on Doctor?
I had thought maybe I'd like to sing it, but I was frankly it was daunting to look at that. And then JY told me that he had he'd been in Chicago, and Lawrence had come there and had sung it. I heard that, and it was like, thank God I didn't step up. You know, and we're the kind of band, we love playing and jamming and seeing if we can get through songs. And our very first day at rehearsal with Lawrence when he came on board in 1999, you know, it was a pretty important day. We went over all these kind of songs because we were getting ready to play some dates. And, it was a long rehearsal. Somewhere, and was it you that started playing a Beatles song or something? We're just getting ready to go back to the hotel, and Lawrence, I think, started playing something from Abbey Road. Well,
right.
We all picked up and played and stayed there for about another hour doing side two of Abbey Road, and so our sound checks, we're constantly, you know, one guy will know a certain part of a song and the other, and we'll try and just get each other through to see how far we can get in certain songs. But I had never heard that particular voice come out of Lawrence, and when JY played that back for me, I was so, it was just stunningly proud, still am, and we've unleashed that song on our audience now since we recorded it, and we play it as part of an encore, and the audience is responding the same way. It's such a great anthem type song that by the time the song is halfway through, the audience members have learned it and they know it and they're singing along with it.
I don't need no
That sticks, refusing medical treatment after serving up a flaming slice of humble pie. The British quartet that featured the late Steve Marriott and a very young Peter Frampton doing Ashford and Simpson's I Don't Need No Doctor. Next, Styx goes back to the well from which all Chicago blues and rock and roll is drawn at 2120 South Michigan Avenue when Tommy Shaw, James Young, and Lawrence Gowan return with me, Redbeard, in the studio for The Big Bang Theory.
Hey, everybody, this is James Young.
And I'm Lawrence Gowan.
And this is Tommy Shaw.
We are Styx.
And we are in the studio for The Big Bang Theory.
Now, Tommy, as I'm getting into this album, Big Bang Theory, it becomes painfully obvious that you had the unenviable task of singing the parts of Roger Daltrey, Steve Winwood, Greg Allman, and Paul Rogers. You got some kind of like career death wish going on in this?
You know, thank God nobody pointed that out to me until after it was all over with. Because, you know, we really didn't think that much going into it. We were thinking about the big picture, and oh yeah, you start looking at this from that perspective, and no, for we ain't doing no cover album, y'all. We'll write our own music, and yeah, because those are some serious shoes to. What was I thinking?
And you're going after not just one of them, Tommy. You're going after them all in one record.
He's coming to get you.
Well, it's my past too, though. You know, yeah. I sang those songs in cars for years, and I was awesome in the car.
All of the songs on Big Bang Theory by Styx are famous rock songs, with one very notable exception. The story on how the late Willie Dixon's blues song, It Don't Make Sense, came to be recorded and released by Styx, is told by the singer, James Young, who went on to a meeting with Willie Dixon's widow, Marie, and son at the old Chess Studios, now the home of the Willie Dixon Blues Heaven Foundation. Here's James Young.
I thought, well, this is the perfect way for us to give back to the city that gave birth to the band. And I thought, you know, we should really come in here and record a track. And I wanted to record Blue Collar Man in this Delta Blues version, the style that Tommy did it. And that, so it took a meeting with two or three weeks later after I'd made a sizable donation to get their attention out of my personal checkbook and to show that I was for real. And actually, I happened to bring in with me Tim Rosner, who was our production manager from time to time and also was Muddy Waters' tour manager for the last 4 years of Muddy's life and was acquainted with Marie Dixon and her son Butch. So Marie and Butch were at this meeting. And in the process of all that, you know, they reminded me of the song that Willie had written. And Butch, who was 6'5" and 350 pounds, bigger than his dad even, said to me, well, Jay, well, I really think that you should record a Willie Dixon song on your next record. And big man that he was, I said, yes. But sincerely, I wanted to do that.
Well, Marie gave you a tape of Don't Make Sense, right?
Well, Willie had given me the album 20 years before.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You know, so it was really a promise I made to Butch, and sadly, Butch was killed in a car accident Labor Day last
year.
Oh, no. Yeah. Mm. And when after Willie passed in the early 90s, his daughter Shirley, who was a great singer in her own right, sort of took over running the foundation, and she died of an aneurysm in the summer of 2003.
Oh, man. Why this song? It Don't Make Sense. Why this song? Why now?
Well, I think there is I haven't really talked about this much, but I think, you know, my own sense of what's going on in the world and in our country sort of, I say, would contribute to me wanting to do this song because the lyrics, if I had written these lyrics, I think it might have, you know, been viewed as too simplistic, but I would have looked at them and said, no, this isn't. But coming from Willie Dixon, Tommy has said this earlier today in a way that, you know, they're simple words, but they convey incredible power in plain English.
You make great plans that span the sky, gave sight to the blind with other man's eyes. You can crush any country in a matter of weeks, so it don't make sense. that you can't make peace. You take one man's heart and make another man live. You even dock to the moon and you come back thrilled. You make a deaf man hear and a dumb man speak, so it don't make sense that you can't make peace. That you can't make peace.
With James Young taking his best lead vocal since Snowblind on the timely Willie Dixon song It Don't Make Sense, You Won't Make Peace from the Styx album Big Bang Theory. Here's JY and Tommy Shaw to explain where that song and an all-new version of Blue Collar Man were recorded, featuring Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legend Johnny Johnson on piano on what turned out to be one of his last sessions ever.
The Chess Recording Studios, where the Rolling Stones went to record their second album, where Chuck Berry had 5 years before recorded Johnny B. Goode, where Muddy Waters did most of his great recordings, was at an address on South Michigan Avenue of 2120 South Michigan Avenue. And Chess Recording Studios, and actually the whole business was located there from 57 to, I believe, 1967. It was my goal to get someone in there along with us recording that would lend weight and draw more attention to the fact that 2120 had become Willie Dixon's Blues Heaven Foundation. But they said Johnny Johnson is available, and so I knew that he was Chuck Berry's piano player, but a lot of the history I didn't know. I had to sort of bone up on it. And when we found out, you know, and this is a wonderful guy that actually was in Chicago for a period of time after the Second World War, and then ultimately moved to St. Louis, where Chuck became a part of Johnny's band, There was a Saturday night when the saxophone player in Johnny's band didn't show up, so someone had given him Chuck Berry's number, so he just called this guy up to fill in for the saxophone player. And then Chuck sort of slowly but surely took that situation over. And but he and Johnny obviously worked together during the heyday. And
that Willie Dixon came in and pretty much it taught them how to record. And Willie actually is playing bass on Maybelline.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to that song now, you'll realize that that's a stand-up bass that's being thumping. That's that Willie Dixon thumping,
mm-hmm.
that knocking sound on the bass guitar. And he patiently sat there with them and taught them how to record that day. And there's a picture on our website, I believe, where Johnny's just explaining that, and all of us are kind of looking at Johnny. We just had such reverence for him to come in and give us his blessing and play with us, and to be there to hear the stories that Johnny was trading with Marie Dixon and Coco Taylor showing up. You know, for us to be able to host this event, for them to show up, and for them to have yet another recording in the long list of incredible works, for us, you know, we couldn't have been more proud.
Give me a job, give me security, give me a chance to survive. Thank you.
can. Born to be a blue collar man. Hey, blue collar man. Blue collar man. Yeah, I'm born to be a blue collar man.
The beauty of having Coco Taylor and Johnny Johnson there is that the building of 2120 in South Michigan is one thing, but it's the human connection and the soul that they breathed into that building that's really prime importance. And so for us to connect with that in that setting, doing Blue Collar Man, which I think is I always hear as a song about dignity and human integrity, it was
a powerful life-altering experience to be there that day with those two people.
That sticks with the remake of Blue Collar Man at 2120 South Michigan Avenue, the legendary site of Chess Recording Studios, now the Willie Dixon Blues Heaven Foundation. The piano there is provided by the legendary Johnny Johnson, who sadly passed away just before this album was released. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking James Young, Tommy Shaw, and Lawrence Gowan of Styx. You can write to us in the studio. Email to redbeard@inthestudio.net. In the Studio was written this edition by yours truly, Redbeard. Transcription by Jane Carpenter. Theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio is produced by Barbarossa Limited. Copyright 2005, all rights reserved.